Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur, of course, joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur during our noontime block and also on the weekend. He was worried, but my train was running a little late this morning. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning.
I'm kind of like a Long Island Railroad, you know.
Well, I don't, you know, I don't listen to traffic reports these days since I never leave the house, but except to walk down the street to the supermarket. But I don't think the railroad is that bad anymore.
No, but it used to be the funniest thing in the world because I remember at one time when John Lindsay was the mayor, they guaranteed like next week the railroad will start to be on time. And of course, Dan Ingram just tore them apart on the radio every day.
Well, I know, but do you know how long ago that was?
That was a lifetime ago.
It was a whole life ago. Yeah. As I've been finding myself saying lately, and all the young people are old now. Because Bob was saying the other day how, oh my God, realize that so-and-so is 60?
You know, my mother...
And I said, you know, all the young people are old now.
When my mother went to an assisted living facility, I'd visit her and she'd say, you know, there's just a lot of old people around here.
Yeah, well... When I went to my sister's senior community, I said, if this is what assisted living is about, I want to be assisted in my living, too. Very luxurious where she is. Yeah. Anyway, tonight, to change the subject totally, is the beginning of Purim, which is the most joyous celebration for Jews of all the whole year. Yes, even more than Hanukkah. Hanukkah is sort of it's okay. I like Hanukkah well enough, but these are not religious holidays. These are what we call festivals. And you could sum up Purim and so many other Jewish holidays as they tried to kill us, we won, let's eat.
That's right.
So it all leads to food. And listen, side note, and Jews, you know, eat a lot of different things. On that note, my friend Leah Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G, Koenig, Leah, L-E-A-H, has just written an extraordinary world cookbook of Jewish food. But you read this book and a lot of historical notes and cultural notes, and it's really a great book. It's just called The Jewish Cookbook. And, of course, you can get it on Amazon. But look it up by name, Leah Koenig, because Leah has written a number of Jewish cookbooks at this point. And if you just go by name on Amazon, you'll find all of them. This one is really, really a masterpiece. Anyway, back to Jews eating everything. Purim is about a heroic woman. Her name was Esther. By the way, Esther could also be called Hadassah, which is where we get Hadassah from. Esther, a great beauty who lived in ancient Persia, was selected by the king to be his new queen. He didn't know she was Jewish, just that he went all over, or women were brought to him. He was sort of the Henry VIII of ancient Jewry, except that he wasn't Jewish. He was the king of Persia, and he got rid of a wife. He got a new wife. He had many wives. Depends on which you read. But Esther was a favorite wife, that's for sure. But she was warned by her cousin or uncle, depends again which what you read, Mordechai. To not reveal that she was Jewish at the court. So in order to do that and remain true to the kashrus, to the kosher laws, Esther became a vegetarian at court. So there was an evil character here. His name was Haman. And Haman was an advisor to the king and was advising the king to get rid of all the Jews. And they even went as far as building gallows to hang the Jews. Esther, apparently an exquisite politician, somehow managed to convince the king, her husband, who was totally enamored of her beauty, she must have been pretty clever too, pretty smart, she convinced the king that it was Haman who was the enemy and not the Jews, and so they hung Haman instead. That is the story of Esther, and we actually read it every year. Now, I tell it every year, so I just did my duty, I think. I embellish it a little bit here and there because I learn new things. And truthfully, I don't know if it's in the newspaper today or if it's just online, but I read this morning a very interesting piece about how the story of Esther, we call it the Megillah, if you've ever heard the people who use Yiddish words say the whole Megillah, that's the whole story. We read it every year, and this rabbi who wrote a piece in the Times is discussing how a chaotic king causes chaos in the country, ancient Persia, and how we might use that information and the lessons of the Megillah to today's political situation. I'm trying to be very diplomatic.
I'm not. I know where you're going. I know where you're going.
I usually am not. At Purim, when they read the Megillah, every time they mention the name Haman in the story, you're supposed to drown out his name with noisemakers and whatever. Several years ago, I went to a reading of the Megillah in the synagogue in Naples, Italy, not Florida, Naples, actual Italy. And for the men, it was that. This is an Orthodox synagogue, so the men and the women were separate. The women are supposed to sit in a balcony area. There were no women at this Megillah celebration because the men and the boys, I must say I was very impressed with the young boys, the pre-bar mitzvah boys even. I'm not talking about boys who've studied and had their bar mitzvah, but they were young boys, like 10-year-olds, who not only could read the Megillah in Hebrew, but, you know, anticipated the mentioning of Haman so that they could scream and yell and use their noisemakers. There were no women because the women were having a separate celebration, which was way noisier than ours. It's because all the children and women were in another room across from the actual sanctuary where the men were. So it's a very joyous. And then afterwards, we had a big luncheon in Naples, and in fact, the kitchen in the Naples synagogue is vegetarian because they don't want to mess around with meat and the separation of meat and dairy and blah blah. And if you are vegetarian, by definition, you're kosher. So, of course, there are some limits on milk and dairy, too, but you can have everything as long as it's produced in the right way. So we had a dairy meal, but it's customary to eat a vegetarian meal tomorrow, this is, because the holiday starts tonight, and I would think that there are quite a few communities where there will be Purim parades. These days, between anti-Semitic incidents and coronavirus, I'm not sure what's going on. But normally, there would be parades tonight and tomorrow, mainly of children, all dressed up in costumes, usually Haman, King Ahasuerus, or Ahasuerus, as I was taught when I was a kid. The pronunciations have changed. Queen Esther, of course. So girls want to be Queen Esther. Boys want to be the king, but some boys want to be, and even some girls want to be Haman and Mordechai, and let's not forget the old man, although he's depicted as an old man, but he might not have been old at all. The other food, so vegetarian meals are, I wouldn't say traditional, but in some communities, Esther's vegetarianism is honored in that way. And by the way, the other I would say probably in this part of the world, the most common Purim food is a pastry called Hamantaschen, named after Haman. I was always thought it was Haman's hat that was tri-cornered, and perhaps it was. But Taschen actually means pockets in German Yiddish. And so Hamantaschen should be pockets, Haman's pockets. And they are pockets. They're triangular-shaped pastries, traditionally filled with only two things. Mon, which is poppy seeds, and that's because Esther ate seeds and nuts when she was at court. It was one of her main sources of protein, and legumes, high-protein legumes, chickpeas, namely chickpeas, and lentils. I've read here and there some Purim lentil dishes. I never made one, but I do make chickpeas. And the other one was prunes, dried plums, because these are Eastern European pastries, and what did you have in Eastern Europe at the end of winter? Dried fruit and the poppy seeds. Another traditional is dried apricots or apricot preserves or apricot jam. Berry fillings these days are very common, as a kid I don't really remember there being berry fillings. And chocolate is totally newfangled. When I was on a WOR in New York City, I often got questions about how to make chocolate-filled Hamantaschen. And I scoured the earth for recipes, never found one. So I created one which has a sort of brownie mixture filling. I haven't made them in years, but I remember them being very good. But the other day, I was in an Israeli falafel joint, and they had chocolate-filled Hamantaschen. I did not try it, but that's not an uncommon filling these days. So that's, Purim is a nice holiday. You give your neighbors a presence of food. Some, I'm sure, Orthodox communities, the tradition is to carry around baskets of food to your neighbors. In my neighborhood, somebody brings me one, I gotta say. Let's see what happens this year. Everything's changing.
I've got to thank you for your. You're never too old to learn something. My grandmother always used to use the term the whole Megillah, okay? Uh-huh. And as a kid, what cartoon did I watch on TV? So I never understood what my grandmother said. Was Megillah Gorilla?
Megillah Gorilla.
But
right.
Megillah Gorilla was not spelled. They left the H off. So my whole meaning of what I thought Megillah Gorilla was has changed.
Oh, yeah, Megillah is a story.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me the whole Megillah. There are other. I can't recall now, but there are other Megillas, but they're minor Megillas. The Megillah of Esther is by far the most famous of the of the Jewish biblical stories. So, I get very nice mail lately. If anybody wants to email me, my email address is Mavens, MAVENS mail. Mavens because food maven, get it? Yeah. Mavens mail at AOL. But I get very nice mail, and then people think, I can tell from the mail, that everything I cook must be fabulous. And I have to say that I'm a very good cook. And most nights my dinner is very good. And I do cook every day, more or less. I mean, there are some days they say, I don't want to cook today. Mainly, that means I don't want to clean the kitchen today. But, which is, I'm more down on cleaning the kitchen, certainly, than I am actually messing it up. I had some disasters this week. You did not want to be at my house for dinner when I made flank steak. Now, I have not made flank steak in 30 years, at least. And now I know why. So, do you ever cook flank steak, Marshall?
I use flank steak for things like fajitas and stuff like that. Sliced really, 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 really,
yeah,
thin.
I sliced it, really, 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 really thin with and on the angle the way you're supposed to.
Yeah.
I marinated it for a whole day. I put it in the marinade in the morning, like around 9 in the morning, and I cooked it around 7 o'clock at night. So that was a day of marinating. Maybe it was from flank steak that I learned that marinades don't do all that much. In any case, I broiled it. No, I didn't broil it. I cooked it in my black iron skillet, which I thought was, I could get it rare but nice and crusty. So I did get it rare and nice and crusty, and I sliced it really thin on the angle, and it was still...
Hard to eat.
Very hard
yeah.
to eat.
Yeah.
And I have dental issues, which are going to be resolved, I'm praying. This morning after I do this program, I'm going to be going to the oral surgeon. But, even without dental problems, I thought it was tough. And I don't mind chewing. And you know what? If the flavor was there, I would have said, okay, I can do this. But, in fact, the flavor wasn't there. Even after that many hours, what is that? 8 hours of no more. 10 hours of marinating. So that wasn't very good. So I also made brownies this week, which were they were only a semi-disaster. I don't know why. I think I just didn't leave them in the oven long enough, but it seemed okay. Because we had to eat around the edge. I mean, you can always salvage something. And somebody would always enjoy an underbaked brownie, I'm sure. But if you ate around, we had to cut it around the edges. So we got about an inch and a half brownies just from the edges. So I don't know. Whenever that happens, I'm tempted to do it again and see if I can figure out what went wrong. And if you ever bake a cake for the first time and it doesn't come out quite right, probably it's the baking time. I think if I'd left this in another 5 to 8 minutes, it would have been okay. So that's all. And also, I know, another disaster. I know this is all on my mind. Maybe if Jill was here, she could tell us what was happening this week with my cooking. I saw somebody on TV make a Brussels sprout slaw by cutting the Brussels sprouts really, really thin on a mandolin, and then I went to my supermarket and one of the prepared salads was a Brussels sprout salad slaw, and I'm thinking, okay, somebody's telling me try doing this, so I did it, and that was another thing. I don't know, it was too tough to eat. I'm going to go back to cabbage for my slaw.
Well, you know,
and other vegetables. I like carrots in my slaw.
It's funny you say that because I watch these cooking shows, seeing as I don't want to watch news on TV, and everybody makes all these fancy-dancy slaws. I'm sorry. Just give me the old-fashioned
slaw. I agree. You know what? It's not like I'm eating slaw every single day. But, you know, I don't like slaw that was just made.
No, it's got to set.
This is probably the mode of the way of the world now, these super crunchy, freshly made coleslaws. But I want mine to sit around for a while and wilt.
Arthur, when I was a kid, we used to go to a restaurant in Torrington, Connecticut, Tony's. Great, two owned by two Polish brothers, greatest guys, the Misikowskis. And they had two of the best things I ever had in my whole life. Their fresh made onion rings and their coleslaw.
That can make a meal of that.
Oh, it was as a kid. You know why I have a weight problem. Give me the slaw. Give me the onion rings.
Oh boy. So okay, I'm off to the oral surgeon.
Wow.
Wish me luck. Sure by next Monday I will be talking as usual. Probably tomorrow. But they already warned me this could be a painful one. And so, I'll be medicated.
So who's going to cook for the next couple of days?
Well, I don't know. I probably won't be able to eat today.
Yeah.
Which is why I always have, I must say these days I always have a lot of chicken stock. Not stock, really good broth in the freezer. And when I run out, when I get down to the last quart, I feel insecure, and I go out and buy chickens and make more. I shop in a supermarket lately that seems to always have chicken necks. I don't mean chicken necks, chicken backs, in the case, and so I buy, you know, like 4 pounds of that. It makes me 4 quarts of chicken broth, really good chicken broth. I cook it for a very long time, so it really extracts from the bones, and you get a really a lot of protein, a good gel.
Now, what do you consider a very long time?
7 hours.
Okay, all right. So really, really thin, just really, really low temperature, right?
Yeah. Perking away. I actually have I own a stock pot, which is a tall, narrow pot, and so you don't get the same kind of evaporation that you would from a wide pot. But if all you have is a wide pot, and I think most people's soup pots is a wide pot, actually, you just may have to add more water as you go along. You want to keep everything covered until the very end. Then you can maybe let it cook down a little bit. But just throw it in a pot with water.
How much water do you
have? Carrot, celery, onion, you know, for 4 quarts of, for 4 pounds of backs. I have 4 or 5 quarts of water, a medium onion peeled and cut into quarters, a large carrot or 2 carrots, and a couple of stalks of celery. It can be cut up so it all fits in the pot nicely. And that's it. That's not it. And the hard part is the next part, which is I bring it to a simmer, and I skim it. And this could take a good 20 minutes of skimming. I've said this on the air before. I have a skimmer tool that makes this easier. It's a strainer, but in the shape of a wide skimmer. And it actually has a curve on the side so that you get it to the edge of the – curves to the edge of the pot. Anyway, I skim off this white scum, for want of a better word. And when it stops coming up, I then smush down the chicken and all the vegetables, and more will come up. And when it stops coming up again, then I can let it roll for 6 or 7 hours.
Okay.
Salt. Don't forget to put some salt in.
I put in
peppercorns.
I was going to say, how much? What type of pepper?
Oh, you know. Yeah. Not even a tablespoon of peppercorns, and you know, and the salt is so adjustable that you can put in for a start maybe a tablespoon, but later on you may want to add more.
You know, I'm glad you went over this because I make chicken stock, and now when you gave me the ratio of water to put in with that, make it in bigger quantities.
It's not so much a ratio, but you want to get at least 4 quarts of broth out of your $4 worth of chicken backs. That's what I pay. I pay 99 cents a pound. I mean, if he has 6 in the case, I'll take all 6. And then I'll get 6 quarts, so 7 quarts. You know, that's adjustable too. If in the end, by the way, in the end, I let it cool down and I strain it, and I these days even strain, I strain it through cloth. I have a napkin that I use, a linen napkin, but cheesecloth is good too. Of course, and I strain it, and then I let it, and then I refrigerate it, and then I skim it because it's going to have a lot of fat on the top, and I use that fat. I don't throw it away. I save that fat. It's good for a number of things, and then I reheat the soup, and if it needs to be cooked down a little bit, so be it. It may be you want it stronger, but usually it's okay. But you can decide. Bring it back to a simmer. And then let it cool again, and then put it in the freezer.
All right.
And I put it in 1 quart containers. Also 3 cup containers, so you don't have to defrost a huge amount at a time.
Okay.
Want you to have. I must say it's my security blanket these days. And when I was sick a few weeks ago, it was a godsend because that was all I could get down. My stomach was so terrible. All I really wanted to eat and could eat was broth.
Well, I want you to have a better time at the dentist than you're anticipating.
Oh, Yeah, I know. I'm not dendrophobia, phobic, actually. I shouldn't put it that way, but I see that it's time for me to get on the road.
Well, get on the road, and
I have an early appointment,
and we will speak to you next week.
I'll tell you how it all came out,
huh? All right,
next week.
Take care.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, you can hear Arthur live on a Monday morning and rebroadcast during the week and on the weekend as well.